Welcome to a bonus episode of the Monochrome Podcast. We're so excited that you guys are here. If you're just now tuning in, I cannot encourage you enough. Go back, listen to the whole season that we just wrapped up. It's incredible. There's a ton of incredible guests. But as our team was kind of planning and thinking about some of the things that may be relevant for 2025 and maybe specifically give some extra sort of conversation around things in the church production or church creative space, there was a word that kept coming up all year, and that was tariffs. And so we pulled a couple of guys together who have a lot of experience in this area. And today we're just going to have a conversation about that. Now, let me just say this. We're not talking about politics today. That is not the purpose of this episode, whether you're for them or against them. They're a reality in how we plan and how we prepare projects, whether they're upgrades or they're new projects. And so some of you listening may have been a part of something like this, that tariffs have affected it. Maybe not. But I also think there's something in this conversation that's going to be helpful that ties into delays or inflation or supply chain access and all that sort of stuff. So it's not just tariffs we'll be talking about. We'll be talking about all those different things. And I am so excited to have two new friends to the podcast joining us. I've got Zach Carringer and Josh Allman today. So excited to have you guys.
Thanks for having us.
Glad to be here.
So Zach, I want to start with you. Why don't you give a little bit of a synopsis of your role, where you're at, a little bit of your history and kind of what you're doing at the church.
Yeah. I'm the production director at First Baptist Concord in Knoxville, Tennessee. Prior to that, I was at another church here in town for 10 plus years, but just started here back in February. And basically right away, there was already some talks and discussions of, hey, we've got some unfortunate seats in our auditorium that have sightline issues, and we wanted to elevate the in-room experience for as many people in the room as possible, obviously. And so we currently don't have IMAG screens, dedicated IMAG screens. We've got a center LED wall, and it's a little larger than a 16 by 9 configuration. So it had, you know, that brings its own challenges.
It's a little bit wider, is that right?
Yes.
It's almost like cinematic.
Wider. Yeah. Yeah. And so one of the things that we really dove into was, hey, we need to think through getting some IMAX screens in here. And so we're in the process of, the install hasn't taken place yet. We are moving towards that process, but there was a lot of other things that we had to kind of do our due diligence on in the room prior to landing on, hey, we're ready to install. And so that is currently where we're at.
So for current context, you've got an LED wall in the center. What do you guys put on that for worship, walk-in announcements, all that sort of stuff? Is it only graphics?
No, it's kind of everything. So worship right now, we aren't running in-room IMAG. We are for our online stream. So worship, it's got screen content, whether that be lyric videos or song visuals, anything like that. That's also the screen that shows our video announcements, you know, bumpers, anything like that. And then when message takes place, we're actually running IMAG on that screen. And so we will do either like a lower third or side third with like scripture fly-ins or anything like that. But we do have in-room IMAG there for the message. But the plan, once we go to the IMAG screen, is that wall will end up being ground stacked on the floor, and that'll be kind of our backdrop behind our team on stage.
Yeah, almost more of like a scenic element, and then you'll have cameras on the side. Yeah,
for sure.
And yeah, that's cool. And Zach, so you've obviously got, in this project, you guys have an integrator, is that right?
Yes.
And has the integrator been working with you guys kind of since the beginning of this project, or did you bring them in after you started doing some due diligence?
They've been with us since day one on this project, and I've worked with this integrator for 15 plus years at this point, and just so got a really good relationship with them. They know how I operate, and it's a really good working relationship of everybody's working towards the same goal.
That's cool. That's cool. If you were to try and sum up in a short few reasons, what is the reason that the installation has not happened yet? If you started in February, where would you say the hangups have been.
Yeah, so obviously tariffs are a part of it, but I'd say that's like 10% of it, truthfully. There was a brief moment where we paused when they shot up and then they came back down, and it was like, hey, tariffs are kind of holding where they're at for 90 days or however long it was. And so that's fine. For us specifically, we had to, this is a video wall install, but it's also, we're a little, where we need to get video wise, we also need to get there lighting wise. So we're trying to kind of knock out two birds with one stone on the rigging side. That's been the thing lately of, when the renovation was done at our building, there was some extra steel added in our ceiling, but I don't know. Again, that was before me, so I'm not really sure why the points were chosen where they were, but needless to say, that's not where we landed on ideal locations for future lighting and for this video wall to go. And so a lot of the work to get to where we are now has been getting in, going up to the ceiling, figuring out, hey, can we rig here? Do we need to add steel? Yes, we do. Okay, now we are talking to a structural engineer and then getting a general contractor in to add the steel. So that's kind of led us to where we are today.
That makes total sense. Yeah, I ask because I'm like, you started in February. That was like when all this started really getting crazy, right? Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I want to introduce Josh to the podcast, not to ignore him during this conversation, but I wanted to hear a little bit of your story, Zach. So I appreciate that. Josh, give a little synopsis of who you are, who you're with, and then a little bit of your background, because I think your background does have an effect to this combo.
Sure. Well, thanks again for having me. I'm currently the general manager for SquareVee LED. We're an LED manufacturer. We're based in Franklin, Tennessee, which is just right outside of Nashville. And I've been here since 2020. Funny enough, right after COVID hit,
You've had two fun runs.
I've had some fun runs. I was leaving a production and an integration company right around the time COVID hit, started here, and then COVID hit in March or April, and been here since then, and obviously been through some ups and downs of the economy and, you know, social things that are happening that affect, obviously, our industry and then affect the AV industry as a whole, whether it's churches or, you know, businesses, stuff like that. But again, prior to this, my background is kind of diverse, but mostly in the AV side of things, whether it's live event production and integration to touring, and then also doing church work as well as a production director. So kind of been a little bit all over the map. So we talked about this before, but, you know, I've purchased, I've used, I've, you know, overseen projects, and then now I'm in the manufacturing side of things.
That's awesome. Yeah. And you guys do both rental and integration or install-based LED.
Yeah, yeah. So we sell both rental and install products, but we're holistically the manufacturer, designer and manufacturer of the product.
And Josh, would you say that most of your projects go through an integration partner?
Yeah, we only exclusively sell to integrators or dealers. Yeah, so we don't sell to end users. And some of that's, you know, it's actually kind of a rarity in the LED world, to be honest with you. A lot of LED manufacturers will sell directly to the end user. We kind of take more of the audio and lighting philosophy that has existed for a while, just because usually those integration partners are the ones who are servicing the job long after it's installed. And so it's really important for us to have that relationship with them, because they continue to have that relationship with the end user, per se a church, versus, you know, the church isn't always going to need to come to us for things. But they're usually going to go to their integrator. We want to continue that trust, that relationship, as opposed to getting in the middle of that relationship.
Yeah, I love that. It's also good to kind of note, you guys are not doing the Zach's church integration or install, right? So this is the fun part.
No,
it's like,
we're not.
Totally separated. Yeah. So Zach can be honest about the LED process.
For sure.
And not be saying it in front of Josh.
We have some amazing partners who have helped make this podcast happen this year. And our friends at Amplio Systems are not just there to install gear, but they are also church leaders who've been in the trenches. They know the pressures of Sunday, they know what you're going through, and they believe your AV system should support your ministry and not distract from it. We love Amplio because they walk with churches from start to finish. They design amazing, like future-proof, volunteer-friendly systems that help people encounter Jesus and, again, not distract from it, which we know can sometimes be a problem with the AV systems. But you can meet Amplio, you can talk to them, hear more about how they could help your church specifically. You can meet them at the Worship Classic on October 7th, which is the day before SALT. So come to Nashville, go golfing with Amplio at the Worship Classic, and then come to SALT together. It is free, which is an extra bonus, and they would love to hear your story. But if you want to check out more info, learn more about the Worship Classic or what Amplio does, just click the link in the show notes.
Josh, I want you, if you don't mind, give us a little synopsis. Obviously, this conversation is around tariffs somewhat, but as you and I said, like, you've been here since COVID. You saw all the supply chain crazy.
Yeah.
Maybe give a slight synopsis as to kind of what really kind of happened in COVID, why we couldn't get LED walls or anything, right? You and I talked about just the chip shortage and some of that sort of stuff. Can you give any insight to that?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the biggest thing on that front is what you saw happen was because things weren't getting manufactured, people were selling through stock, right? So they already had stock sitting on the shelf. So two things were happening. Not only were they weren't manufacturing new, they were selling through the stock that they had. So which is what they would do when there is a manufacturing lapse or they're trying to bridge that gap. So they sold through the stock. And then by the time the stocks has been sold through, the manufacturing lead time is lagging big. And then you had this massive rush for specific things like PCB boards. That's one of the biggest things because that's in everything. Anything that's electronic that has any sort of communication, whether it's AV or cars or anything like that, needs a PCB board. And there was just a massive rush on that. And then that also uses raw materials like gold and copper and fun stuff like that. And so you just have this influx of need and requests, and it just bottlenecks. And then on top of that, the shipping side of things was really crazy because, you know, again, you go from zero to 100 in a lot of ways where there was nothing happening. And then now everything has to happen because we have to get stuff in for Christmas. We have to, you know, we've got to restock our shelves that we've blown through the supply. So there's just so many things happening. And then also, too, you have different countries. Then you have different states that have had different regulations on what you could and couldn't do. And you have different ports. You have a New York port that is operating differently than a California port, than a, you know, the Long Beach port. And then the Savannah port in Georgia is operating. They're completely different. They're not doing the same thing.
Is it easy at all to change ports? Or, I mean, you and I talked about, like, there is such a delay in kind of distribution logistics and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not hard. Once you have your international shipping number and you ship, it's not hard. It really comes down to, I think the biggest issue though is that by the time you switch, because by the time if you're getting something from China per se, which is they're a huge manufacturer for what's happening, by the time it leaves China, you're talking 4 to 6 weeks that it's going to be on the water. Well, by the time it gets close to the water, the port might have cleared up in Long Beach in California, and you switched to Savannah. Now Savannah's backed up because everybody switched to Savannah, or, you know, they switched to New York, you know, so we did play that game. We went to New York for a while because California was so backed up. And we knew that we could see that we were seeing how backed up they were, that we did switch to New York for probably about 6 months. And then as LA cleared back up, we decided, you know, we're going to switch back to LA just because some logistics things that made more sense to go back there. So.
Yeah, I've always thought trying to make Sunday happen during COVID was a lot of logistics. I forget what you all were jumping through to get it into the right port, and then got to make sure you have trucks there to still get it somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
And I actually think, you know, we've talked about this, Zach. I don't know where you were. I knew you were at a different church, I think, during COVID. But it's like, I think COVID was such a perfect time for a lot of these churches to make production upgrades because you may have had a space where you actually had a couple of weeks where people weren't in it. I was sitting with an integrator the other day and he said, we've never had that time. In fact, most churches need to make sure that their Sunday's not down for more than a week or so. If it's a remodel, they got to do so much kind of, as you're saying, Zach, behind the scenes stuff so that architectural stuff, the infrastructure is ready. And then it's just a 1 week install commission and you're up that next Sunday.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. I mean, and that's what we're doing with this video wall install is, all this prep work's going in, and then the actual install will start immediately following our last service on Sunday, and we'll basically go and be done before the next Sunday. But yeah, COVID, I think COVID was just wild because working at a church, I think there's the side of like, hey, how do we obviously still keep people as connected as possible? So everything was shifting to that more of that live stream type feel, like, hey, we got to stream this, we got to stream that. So there was some gear purchases then of like, hey, we need some more cameras, or we need this, or we want this. But we did some major, major set change installation during that time as well. And it was, what was great for my team is that it wasn't like, hey, we've got to knock this out in 4 days. Yeah. You know, we're going to work 80 hours in 4 days. We were able to work at a good pace, but still get it done, you know? So it,
yeah, that's awesome.
Josh, it definitely had its advantages.
Josh, can you unveil a little bit of the mystery behind Country of Origin? You and I were talking about some LED manufacturers are actually shipping more raw components and kind of finishing them stateside, which is helping some of that tariff risk factor. I don't know what Square V is doing, if you want to talk a little bit about that, but kind of you have a good pulse on kind of the industry. How does Country of Origin get manufactured or just termed and all that sort of stuff? How does that affect?
Yeah, I mean, I think specifically in the LED world, most everything is manufactured in China. There are some stuff that's manufactured in Japan and Korea. There's some stuff in Taiwan.
Is that changing in the last couple of months? I mean, have you seen any manufacturers say, let's uproot? Or
I think everybody's trying, but the reality of the situation is, which is, I know there's some conversations about this across other industries, not LED or not even AV related, but the technology, the machinery, the education, knowledge base, the raw materials, the LEDs themselves, the gold, all that sort of stuff. China has that. And they've been developing that for several years. There's no other country that really can rival that. And so it's one of those industries that's kind of like, there's not too many places to go. Now, again, there are some companies that will bring in parts and pieces, and they maybe have their frames manufactured here in the U.S., which has even become more of a rarity too, because raw material for metals, you know, the cost of that has kind of been all over the place, and still China specifically is very price competitive on their raw materials because they have so much of it, right? So some places have done that to try to lower the tariff load, but again, I had this conversation with somebody else. I akin it to like fireworks, right? Now that we're kind of around 4th of July, there's not too many countries outside of China that manufacture fireworks, right, for mass consumption. And so to switch that industry overnight is almost impossible. It can happen, but there's a huge runway for it. And so since that's the case, you kind of have to just navigate the situation that you have, make the best out of it. And then if you need to try to future-proof, you can, but just understand that that runway is pretty long. And you can get there, but again, just understand your limitations going into it.
And so for most manufacturers, they're making this in China, like you said. Obviously, there's some other countries there. In your experience, Josh, is China the one that's gotten hit the most? I mean, my handy-dandy ChatGPT told me that most tariffs are under 5% aside from China. I don't know if that's still accurate.
I mean, the thing is there's been like a 20% tariff in place since 2017.
Oh, such already. A good point to bring up. Yeah. So it's been common.
Right. It was already in place. Now, the difference is that you're seeing now is that price, by the time we get to 2020, 2021 now, that's already rolled into the cost of the good, right? Most manufacturers, it's not a separate line item. It is the price, right? Because it's just been there. The new tariffs that got tacked on, a lot of people, including us, chose to put it as a separate line item because we didn't understand how temporary it was, how permanent it was going to be. And then also there was so much flux, especially early on. We wanted to make sure customers knew, here's the baseline cost of the product. So when you're budgeting for future projects, if you're going to put it on hold, you can go, I know what this costs, and look at this tariff line item and go, okay, hey, I may have to pay this in 6 months if it's still there. I may not. So that's kind of how we kind of handle that. But you know, it's really difficult to tackle that, really, because again, at the end of the day, I'm the one that has to pay the tariff. So when we import the product into the US, the Border Patrol, which is who actually assesses tariff and levies it, they send me a bill that says, hey, you owe this much in tariff, and that's the, we pay it, right? So there's no real burden on the factory, the manufacturer, physical factory in China that does that, except for the fact of maybe downed business on our end that's affecting them financially. It's really us that we have to pay that bill when it comes due up front. So
yeah, that makes total sense. Zach, how did you guys budget? That's an interesting question to think about. How did you, I mean, you said you guys started this project in February. Obviously tariffs were a forefront conversation and, you know, our minds. How did you guys navigate that?
Yeah, and I think even just echoing what Josh said, like the separate line item for the tariff itself is very transparent, and it's something that my integrator did, and it to me it shows like, hey, I'm not trying to make more on you in this time where everybody's figuring this out. Like, hey, here's the cost of the actual product, and this is just kind of the cost of doing business right now. Like, it's that thing that everybody's kind of juggling. So for us, there was a brief pause. Cause like you said, like we started and it was like, oh, these tariffs are through the roof. And so we did probably pause for a week or so until it kind of leveled back out for the time being. And then, past that, it's just kind of like one of those things that, leadership here had already kind of started planning in the last couple years of, hey, this is coming. So whether it be saving or whatever, budgeting for this video wall, it was already done with some mindset of, hey, cost of everything has gone up since the last time we bought a bunch of gear. So it hasn't been an extreme factor. If anything, you know, on the video stuff, it's maybe a little more. I know for some PA stuff like D&B out of Germany, like I think Josh said too, like it's minimal percentage compared to the stuff from China, but it's kind of also been where it is for the last few years. So
Zach, what did you guys have to do on the church side with leadership to kind of help them understand some of those price differences? Did that delay or did that extend your sort of due diligence quoting process, going through all the sort of specifications and requirements?
So our executive pastor of administration who oversees finance and all that, he has a financial background before he even came on staff at church. So I was very fortunate. I didn't have to really do much explaining. If anything, he taught me some things, but having even opening the conversation, he was not at all blindsided, which was very refreshing and super easy to work with on all this. And so if anything, it's been a very mutual, hey, we're taking it a day at a time right now, especially with all the rigging stuff too. You know, that if anything, the rigging stuff for us was more of the stuff that we didn't realize that we were going to necessarily need until we actually kind of like opened the can on this. And it was like, oh, we've got to go through this.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Josh, on your side, you obviously work on a ton of different projects, or at least have maybe purview into a ton of different projects. How do you feel like churches are planning for this, budgeting for this? Have you had to sort of do anything? I mean, you haven't just had tariffs. I could only guess. You've had raw material cost increase, inflation increase, labor increase. Walk through kind of how you guys are seeing this play out.
Yeah, I think really with churches, what we try to do up front is just educate them on what they're looking at and what they're trying to buy, whether they buy from us or they don't. Again, I come from a church background, and even my own church in the last 2 years was looking at buying an LED wall, and the situation of that, it honestly didn't make sense. A projector still made sense in that world, and I actually said that, which, you know, takes money from my business. But at the end of the day, though, like as a person who's worked in a church and a person who attends church, I have a more vested interest in them doing the right thing financially than I do the right thing for me business-wise, right? And so for churches, what we try to do is we try to give them enough information about what they're buying so that they don't have to buy two or three LED walls. Because that happens a lot, right? We spend less money now, but you're going to spend more money later because you're going to have to replace it because you bought something that wasn't reliable. You didn't buy something that had good support in the U.S. or good support period. And you end up spending more money in the long run. Yeah. The other thing that's tough, too, is because the LED world and the LED space specifically, it's just easy for anybody to become an LED company and sell things that churches have kind of been kind of picked on by some of those companies. And they've used the idea that, hey, you're a church, we market to churches, and it's become a marketing thing and not necessarily a, hey, this is good business for you. This is good. And this is fiscally responsible for the church. And here's why, versus, hey, you know, you're a church, this is the cheapest price, this is the thing, we know you want an LED wall, here you go. And I think, so again, at the end of the day, I would much rather spend time educating our church users, and whether they choose us or not, at the end of the day, it doesn't, for me, it's not the end all be all, but I want them to be good stewards of their finances. And if I can do that by educating them, then I'd rather do that.
Yeah, no, that's so good. And I think that there's, what you're probably hinting at is there's a little bit of trust lost in the industry that you guys have to kind of work a little bit harder to gain back, to show quality, to show reliability, to show support, all that. No, that's absolutely so valuable. Zach, I want to go back to kind of your situation. In your church, you mentioned that you've got this ultra wide center screen and you're moving to add iMag on the side. I'm just going to ask, are you guys doing the same brand LED product from the center that you currently have to the sides? And how are you guys navigating some of that?
No, we are not doing the same brand. We currently have a Absin wall in the middle, and then we are looking at an infrared product for iMag. With some of the rigging stuff and everything, you know, obviously weight is a factor, but also we want, you know, a higher quality pixel pitch for iMag, and so that's kind of just led us to where we are. And then budget is a thing too. You know, if there was a money tree planted out back, you know, we could just say, hey, we're going to go full infrared, you know, across the board, but
oh, it's and one replace of those things the too. Absent, I see. Yeah.
It's one of those things too, that is just not a reality right now. And I don't think that's going to be an issue. And I think too, for a lot of churches, like it's kind of like, When you look at your project or like, hey, these are the upgrades I want to do. The biggest thing for me has always been like having to slow myself down, because I think I have a natural tendency to want to, oh, I got to do this, and we need this, and we need this, and the latest gear. I mean, we were talking, I think, before we got started about Infocom, and it's like you see all the new gear that comes out, and you're like, I want to, you know, it's not Amazon. You can't just go buy. And so I think slowing yourself down and figuring out, hey, how can I phase this in, and what makes sense to phase it in the order, like what's the best way to phase this in and then the best order to do so. And so that's kind of been our thing through.
Well, to your point, you guys have to upgrade the rigging for the LED wall.
Yeah.
Why not go ahead and upgrade rigging for lighting and be ready for that?
And I think even going back to what Josh was saying, like an integrator that you can trust and that you have a relationship with is so crucial. I won't say the name of the company, but we were looking for one of our campuses is going to start meeting in a high school auditorium. And, you know, we talked to various different like portable church type companies. That's not the company, but one of the things they were talking about, projectors versus LED walls and what can we install permanently and what can we not? And, you know, they're talking like, oh, well, we can sell you LED panels, $150 to $250 a panel. And they were really pushing this product.
Josh is dying inside.
Because I asked the question. I said, you know, what do you guys see like with this tariff stuff right now? I mean, this is 2 months ago. And so they're like, oh, we've got tons of stock. And my thing that I would say to anybody that's a production director, technical director in any church is, hey, just because the company you're talking to has a stockpile of gear doesn't mean that gear is right for you and your church. So it's like, I know they have this gear and they need to sell it because that's business and that's how they make money. But at the same point, like Josh was literally just saying, hey, I work for an LED company, but I told my church in this moment, hey, a PJ is better than an LED wall. And so I think your integrator or the vendors you're working with, they've got to have your best interest at heart. Because I know our integrator, I asked him a question about, hey, can you do this or can you do that? And he's like, yeah, I can, but there's a better company for that. And so like in full transparency, like that's what keeps me going back to them is because it's like, hey, I don't feel like you're trying to sell me something. I feel like you have our best interests in mind when you're thinking through these future projects.
Yeah, that's good. Josh, I want to actually dive in a little bit to this concept. You know, what I know to be true about LED walls, kind of to what Zach was talking about, if budget was unlimited, he'd get the matching brand, matching batch all the way across. Obviously, LED is made in batches. Can you give maybe a slight, maybe not, you know, expert level, but maybe, you know, simplify it a little bit of like how LEDs are made, why batches matter, why color, you know, matching can't happen when you buy them too far separated from each other.
Yeah. I mean, LED diodes, the way that they're still made is still pretty much a natural resource element, right? So it's not something that's fully manufactured. It's still using raw material, raw element things that are not consistent. Right. Again, if you the best analogy I'll give is if you cut down two trees that are both oaks, they're going to be different. Right. And so if you get lumber out of that of these two different oaks, they're going to look similar. They're going to have a lot of the similar properties, but they are not going to be the same no matter what you do. And because you're still using natural elements in these LED diodes, you have the same. Now, the process, what they try to do is they try to, as they make them in batches, is that they then try to put them together. And then there's another process that, and this is, I won't get too deep into it, but then they can also put them in specific bins that are even closer matches. And, but those, again, those cost more money, right? So some that LEDs that are close go together. Some LEDs that are extremely close go closer together. And the price kind of varies in that as well. So one of the things that we heard a lot at Infocom, we hear every year, but we heard it a lot this year, was that, well, this person said that they could match LED batches. And the first thing I would say to them is, that's not true. it's almost, it's impossible. The closest that we've really seen to color matching has been around 80 to 85%. And that's from some processing, you know, folks who do the processing who can go in and actually adjust colors and go and tweak inside of that, inside of the system. And
are there specific colors, Josh, that are harder to match than others? Or are there certain ones that are super easy to match in different batches?
Yeah. So really, usually green, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, because we went through this process. Green is one of the hardest because it has a tighter spectrum. So if you were to look at some color spectrums, RGB, when we're talking about here, red and blue have a wider color spectrum in the sense that it's easier to hit. And green has a little bit tighter parameters. And so green is just a harder color to do the matching in. So then if you have to mix RGB to make white, if you have one color that's harder to do, then the whole color white per se is difficult.
Right.
So, and then the other issue that you have, issue you have with it is kind of what Zach could be potentially dealing with, but he's using IMAG separate. And on the backdrop is that you have, you know, burn time. How long is the existing wall that you've had been burning? And even if you could color match better than 80%, now you're talking about the use of the bulb next to a fresh bulb is going to be slightly different. So there's a lot of factors into that, but.
Yeah, I was attending a church about 5 to 7 years ago, and they obviously bought LED in two different batches. And Josh, you and I would have cringed. Zach, you probably would as well. But like, they were trying to hide the older panels in like the corner, but like, it was just it looked like, you know, a checkerboard. I mean, you could just tell there were misaligned pieces, and they worked hard because I got to know the tech guy, and he was like, "Yeah, we kind of screwed up. We bought 60. They were a mobile church, Zach, and so they were trying to be really cautious, and then." they added like another 30 panels. And he's like, yeah, that was a big mistake. When they ended up buying a building, they ended up throwing all of it out or giving it to some other ministry. Cause they were like, we can't use this in any way, and start it over. So to your point that you made earlier, Josh, do your homework, think that out.
Right.
Is there any way, you know, that manufacturers are making like super large batches to sort of overcome this, or is it still unlikely that they would have it 6 months later?
They probably wouldn't have it 6 months later. I mean, again, cause you're talking, there are probably really three or four big LED, and by LED, I mean the diode manufacturers in China that are reputable that you want to be buying panels that have these from. And so you got to think there's not only the US, but domestic China, which is for all of these LED manufacturers, domestic China is their biggest customer, not the US. The US is their second largest customer.
That's fascinating.
So you have billions and billions of LED diodes that are made to go for these products. So they run, the batches just get run through very quick. And I can't buy. So let's say if I bought for Zach's church, let's just say I bought 200 panels for him and it uses a certain batch. I couldn't buy a whole other batch of just raw LEDs and hold on to them because they have a lifespan. Oh, I can't just hold on to that batch to then remanufacture for him if he changes his mind in 6 months and says, we want to add 200 more panels.
So this opens up a whole nother conversation real quick I want to dive into, and that is spare.
Sure.
In the world of LED, right? I mean, if a projector goes down, the whole projector goes down. You get a new projector or whatever, or you swap the bulb out. In LED, to kind of the point I just told about my church that I was going to, you know, they wanted to add some. Josh, how do you guys, and then I want to hear from Zach on the church side, but from the manufacturer side, how do you guys help churches or any client for that matter buy enough spares on the front end so that if a panel goes out, if a section goes out, if this die goes out, you can actually replace it and it's still part of that same batch? And is there a lifespan on that?
Yeah, sure. So two things in that. So with all of our orders, and this is not a sales pitch, but with all of our orders, you get 5% spares.
Industry standard?
Yeah, that's pretty. I think anywhere from 3 to 7. For our fine pitch stuff, you know, down to like 0.9, we do anywhere from 7 to 10%, just because, you know, those products are a little fragile.
Yeah.
So you get that. And then on top of that, we actually get with the order a reel of pixels that is specifically from your manufacturing batch that stays in our service department sealed. So when you have issues, like you need a pixel serviced or repaired, you send it back to us here at the shop. They'll use your pixels that was used for your manufacturing run. And we have a large reel of that. And, you know, I think there's usually like 100 to 200 pixels in that reel. And so, again, we're using stuff from your batch. And then obviously when that runs out, you know, there's some things you can do still to kind of work through that. But yeah, that's pretty standard. And that's obviously what we try to, and we do that with hardware stuff too, like power supplies, PCB boards, receiving cards, you know, 5% of that. And then through the warranty of the product.
But I would assume the diode's the most volatile thing in color matching, at least.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's, you know, if we're talking specifically color matching, yeah, that's the big thing, like PCB boards. And then the IC drivers that go on the back of the PCB board that help obviously push data, that has way less to do because you can program that stuff. The diodes themselves, because they are lights, right? And they have kind of a life of their own in that way, are definitely the big driver in the color matching space.
I love this. We're in total nerd talk. We have totally pushed someone off of this podcast that's not listening, but if you're hanging in there, I love it. This is we're your people. Zach, give us the church perspective of this. On your side, how have you guys thought about spares, or even in your older wall, the Apson wall that you've had? I mean, have you guys had to sort of use some of these spares? How have you guys thought about that?
Yeah, there's definitely been a few times we've had to swap out spares. That wall was purchased from a company here locally. And again, on the whole relationship thing, like a couple guys from that company go to church here. They serve on the production team here. So like that's been great. I think, though, just for me, like the thing I keep going back to in thinking through spares and everything is just have a plan, more so than just, hey, we're buying the gear. Think, okay, if I buy this gear, or what's my face to buy the gear? Okay, I bought this console or I bought this LED wall. Realistically, in over the next 5 years, what do I see that needs to be done that's like preventative maintenance and scheduled maintenance? And hey, this is where we see this video wall lasting us X amount of time, or we see this console lasting us X amount of time. And by 2030, we're going to need a new PA. Like, I think everything holistically in production, you need to think through, like, what's the service schedule? What's the, you know, upgrade and update schedule? And I think on the other side, at least from my experience, any executive pastor or CFO, senior pastor, whoever you're working with, like, that's relieving to them as well, because they're able to plan holistically for the entire church, knowing, hey, you know, we're probably going to need to upgrade this, and that's going to be a big ticket item over the next, you know, 4 years or whatever.
Yeah. And I think it also shows trust that you've done your due diligence. You know what you're talking about. You've done the research, and you're bringing the expertise that I think only a tech director or production director can really bring to a church. So that's awesome. Guys, I want to ask one more question. I know we're running out of time, but, and I thank you for the time you've dug into here, but I'm curious, both of you have a pretty good pulse on the church and technology at large. Obviously, Josh, you just came from Infocom. Is there any technologies or products that you guys are seeing kind of coming on the horizon, maybe specifically not LED related, that gets either of you excited about the future of the church, the future of production, the future of sort of the opportunity for the church to benefit from production?
Yeah, I think for me, I got my start in audio. And so that's kind of, that's still something that I love to gravitate towards. And I think there's been a lot of new things now that churches can tap into, specifically on the speaker side and on the wireless side, the RF side of things, that allow you to, I know Shure released some new things. Sennheiser, pretty much everybody this year at Infocom released a lot of new RF stuff that's really cool, that has a lot more functionality and flexibility. You get a lot more use out of your RF side of things versus having to buy so many different transmitters and stuff like that.
Yeah, you're talking about, like, as you get into like the digital stuff and some of the antenna technology that's coming out. It's pretty crazy. Yeah. Zach, have you seen anything lately technology wise that has kind of really gotten you interested or excited?
Yeah. I got a chance to hear the CCL PA from DMB. Sounded incredible. That product, the PA that we have currently is not DMB PA, but my background has been on DMB gear, and so it was kind of one of those of like, felt like home a little bit hearing it. But I'm excited to see maybe what Clearcom's doing with the new Icon stuff. I think they just rolled that out at Infocom. So
yeah, it's funny that you say that, because in the pre-show you said, yeah, we don't really have to do our audio, we just have to do the lighting and video. Now you just said you're super interested in the new PA. So
I am, but that's one of those things where it's like, hey, in 5 to 7 years or whatever, there'll be something new out and we'll look at that then. But
well, guys, I so appreciate your time. I mean, no matter what the situation is that churches face, whether it's tariffs, whether it's supply chain, whether it's inflation, obviously planning is sort of the piece that's so important to this process, and kind of having a full picture. And I think you guys have hit it on the head. An integration partner is such a great, valuable resource to sort of be that middleman to help educate and understand kind of what's happening across not just a single manufacturer or a single country, but industry wide, and really be able to see that. So I thank you guys for diving in. If people want to connect with you a little bit further, how can they? Josh, we'll start with you. Square V, how can people connect with you a little bit further?
Yeah, you can reach out to me directly at josh@squareVLED.com, or you can go to our website. We also have a free tool for you guys to design your own projects. If you want to play around with building your own LED wall for your space and see what the specs are and what that looks like. It's a free tool.
Or like how many tiles you need for like the size.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And it's pretty diverse what you can do with it as far as just, I have this size space or I'm dreaming. Right. And then you can send that directly to us. It comes directly to me and we can help quote that for your integrator, or we can say, hey, here's what this product looks like. So yeah, that's the best way to kind of reach us directly. And like I said, you can get a hold of me directly at josh@squareveled.com. And like I said, I'd be happy to talk to you because I love education. I just want to educate people on what's out there LED wise, not necessarily specifically product to product, but quality, build, because those things really are a big factor in the product itself.
And I can say this, that Josh is more than just an LED guy. You've already heard him allude that he started in audio. He was a touring audio engineer, front house guy for a Christian band a long time ago. Been in the church, been on the integration, been on the live side. So you got a lot of experience in a lot of areas there. Zach, how can people can connect with you deeper?
Yeah, I'm on socials, just my first and last name. And then happy to give out my email. It is zkerringer@fbconcord.org.
fbconcord.org is obviously y'all's church. We'll put all of this stuff in the show notes. So if you're looking to get those information, make sure you take a look at that show notes. And if this conversation has invigorated you and you're listening to this, if you are a nerd like us who love talking about LED diodes and, you know, all the new technology that's coming out and wavelengths and, you know, batches, share this with a friend. Would you give this bonus episode a little bit of love? Help us get this in front of the right people. And hopefully it's been helpful. And we will see you guys next time on the next episode of the Monochrome Podcast. Take care, guys.